Hello, and welcome once again to your favourite underground movie radio station, Coldpix Radio, WCPX 66.6 in your pod store, with, as always, your trusted guide, Django Nudo.
And the Smut Peddler.
And we are always together, the one and only, we are Coldpix.
Coldpix.
Yes.
Indeed.
And Coldpix trendsetters, dare I say, because this week the news came that Netflix is going to be branching out, doing things which we have been doing for a while already, Smut Peddler. So, get a load of this. Merchandising.
Okay, check.
Podcasts.
Check.
Head of Consumer Products, they're hiring. Okay. I guess that's both of us.
Definitely, yes.
So they want to do all sorts of things other than just, you know, produce films and TV shows. They want to engage with people. I think what I get from reading between the lines is that they're kind of topping out on the number of new subscribers in mature markets like, you know, North America and Western Europe. So I think they're trying to squeeze more money out of the people they have by getting them to buy Stranger Things t-shirts and... Well, I mean, podcast seems like an obvious one. Why haven't they done podcasts earlier?
It's so interesting. And, you know, another story in the same vein is that our very, very good friends at Synapse Films just started podding.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah. And I also saw that the Brazilian VOD service, Darkflix. Darkflix have started doing celebrating celebrities' birthdays on a daily basis in social media. So I guess we are trendsetters, aren't we?
Yes. Let's take full credit for that, because Absolutely. Nobody was doing podcasts or celebrity birthdays before we came up on the idea. But no, it just shows that, you know, you have to engage with your fans and your members. You know, you can't just dish up the film or TV show and hope that that's enough. With, I mean, Disney has known this for decades. And why should we be any worse? So what other exciting and good news do we have to tell our faithful listeners this week?
Well, the huge news is that we are now part of the establishment.
Have we sold out?
Immediately, yes.
Already? It only took 10 episodes of the podcast.
I'm sorry to say so, yeah. We just yesterday received an email from the Swedish Film Institute stating that we have received a grant that we applied for.
Yes. This was a very pleasant surprise. So this is, you know, to... not because we're good looking, but, you know, for us to be able to do innovative stuff. Is that right?
Yeah. And of course, having always been the underdogs and being bitter and anti-establishment, it's very hard to adjust to this new situation, I think.
So you have to overcome being bitter and twisted when you cash the check.
Probably, yes. And then in a few weeks, we're going to be bitter again.
And next thing you know, we'll be selling out to Netflix.
But no, never. And also, actually, part of the decision about us getting this grant is that we are an important part in the industry regarding diversity.
That's true.
And normally, in the woke world, diversity means something else. But here, it means we stand for a completely different set of genres and films than the ones that normally get the subsidies.
That's very true. Yes, we have films that are black, we have films that are white, we have films that are color.
We do. And we have some credits in the films that are also in negative, actually.
Oh, there you go.
I realized, yeah.
That's the full spectrum or rainbow of film types. But in all seriousness, I mean, we are... Is it too soon to claim that we are the biggest global streamer out of Sweden?
Yeah. We are probably the only one, so that's for sure.
Yes.
But I would also go as far as to claiming that we are the video on demand service in Sweden and globally that has the most domestic films.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes. And yeah, there is a market for that. I was on a webinar with a company called Oleflix or Olefilms, something. Anyway, they do Spanish cinema mm-hmm. for the world. So if you're Spanish or Spanish speaking and living in, I don't know, the Philippines, then that's the way to, you know, catch all the other films that are not by Almodovar and wouldn't be distributed locally. So something to be said for exporting.
And there's so much film out there, and we are finding more and more films from different countries and adding them to the service, and it's amazing what we are finding out.
Now, if you can hear that sound, it's the sound of us clapping ourselves and tapping ourselves on our shoulder for job well done, because this week we also, well, just over a week ago now, the site has opened up to everybody, and you know, anybody can now navigate the site, look at the films we have, read up our musings and ramblings, and of course they can join should they choose to, not at the VIP price, but you know, as fully paid up members annually or monthly.
Yeah, and you can also now browse the whole content. It's just when you want to watch a movie you have to pay up.
Yeah, which is fair enough. But I have to say, it's been a pretty smooth launch. I'm pretty happy with it. The one minor irritant is, of course, the same day that we launched, there is a global outage by a company nobody had ever heard of before called Firstly, but apparently they provide data center services so that you don't have to fetch the New York Times front page downloaded from New York or wherever Virginia the data center is. There's a local cache in Stockholm or London or wherever, and they crashed, and suddenly everybody from CNN to The Guardian to Spotify were having problems. And even though we don't use them, I'd never heard of them, the companies that we use for our website, like Firebase for SMS login, used them. And so there were a lot of unhappy members who couldn't log in, and we had no idea what was going on. So that was a bit unfortunate.
Yeah, that they blamed us, and it just happened to coincide with this outage in the whole world.
But, you know, these things happen. I think when Netflix launched in Europe, there was like a thunderstorm, I think, in Ireland, which knocked out a data center, and they also went offline. So shit happens.
Yeah. And I mean, this problem, I think it lasted for about 2 hours. So we were just unlucky.
Yeah. And knock-on effects. But, you know, hey, that's, you know, if you want to avoid this kind of thing, buy films on VHS or DVD. You know, it doesn't get impacted by data centers. So in the meantime, we're okay. Any other excitement or news this week? I mean, that was quite a bit already. You know, we've had Netflix copying us.
Let's save another good news for next week. I think I have something up my sleeve.
Ooh, I'm intrigued. Yeah. Okay.
As well, you should be.
As I'm always.
Yep.
So with that, we've got part two of last week's topic. And before we do that, shall we play a little refresher of what it is that we're talking about?
Is there anyone out there who still isn't clear about what doing drugs does? Okay, last time. This is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
Now, for those of you who couldn't visualize it, that was an egg being cracked. And I don't know about you, but for me, it made me more hungry than aware of the dangers of brains.
It's very hard to imagine that your brain will actually fry like an egg.
You got to have pretty heavy duty drugs, I mean, to go that far.
Yeah.
I mean, cumulatively. Before we get into the films, you know, honestly, what was the last time you tried some egg frying?
Oh, I fried, you know, you have to fry some eggs to make an omelette or whatever they say. No, crack some eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, let's not go into detail on that.
Okay. Yeah, I got through the whole lockdown and everything without even once. Not that I never do. I'm one
good for you.
Square. Yeah. Films are my drug.
Yes. And cocktails.
And cocktails, yes. Learn to mix my own martinis. That was mine.
We're not teetotalers, are we? We are.
No, no,
we
no.
Do drink our. We do like our beer.
We're fun people.
Yeah.
And we're even more fun after a few drinks. So
absolutely,
you know, buy us a drink when you meet us. And let's talk about Alice.
Yes, Alice is such a. It's a story that can be lent to so many purposes, isn't it?
It is. It's and it works for every generation. Can find something new in Alice.
Yeah.
You know, from Lewis Carroll's excessive interest in young girls, to, you know, countless live action animation retellings, reimaginings, and we've got two of them on Cult Picks.
Mm.
So, shall we begin with Alice in Acid Land?
The eyes of a young girl barely out of high school. Her name is Alice Trenton, and she's been on a long, long trip. But unlike the fabled Alice in Wonderland, this Alice never saw the Cheshire Cat, the Mad Hatter, or the Queen of Hearts. This Alice traveled through the dark and endless caverns of Acid Land. The place for her was no fairy tale. Psychiatrist for the state, I've been faced with some strange and but none stranger than the story I'm about to tell you. Alice in her first year of junior college, and until she was introduced to Frieda Hamilton, a young Frencher, she had been a normal, well-adjusted young lady.
So, Alice in Acid Land is from 1969, and I would also like to add that most of our drug films in this episode of Cult Picks Radio are courtesy of Something Weird Video.
Yes.
So thank you, Lisa Petrucci. This film is, as we talked about in the last episode, how you use drugs for exploitation purposes, but also disguised as warnings.
Yes.
So here's one typical that kind of film where you have people smoking weed, dropping acid, having lesbian sex, and it's all very a big no-no, but everything is obviously very up there on the screen.
It's obviously taking slight liberties with the source material when the White Rabbit is a lesbian French tutor, but hey, you know, it works in the context of the film. Yeah. So, and not at all just an excuse to show, you know, depraved nudity and cashing in on the whole hysteria around hippies and drugs and free love.
And then Django Nudo, you found a film which was made 2 years later, which I feel is really interesting.
Yes. So this little curiosity I hadn't heard about before, but when I came across and when I saw it, I felt, you know, this is a perfect double bill. You could call it Curious Alice in Acid Land. But Curious Alice was a short that was made to warn kids, young kids, like 8-year-olds, against drugs. And it was sponsored or paid for by the U.S. National Institute of Mental Health. That was obviously involved in a lot of anti-narcotics. And it's this wonderful animation. You know, the lead character, played by a girl, and everything else around her is animated. So it's got this wonderful Terry Gilliam-esque kind of quality of a young girl who discovers not a portal, but she discovers her parents' or her mother's bathroom cupboard full of pills. And then the liquor cabinet full of pills, and then all sorts of drugs in the kitchen cabinet and cigarette cabinet. So all these wonderful things. And then, of course, eventually she travels into this wonderland of drugs, and she meets all of the druggy characters there. And there, it really makes appreciative just how druggy they were to begin with. I mean, the hookah smoking caterpillar, a dormouse on barbiturates. And of course, the Mad Hatter, you know, tripping on LSD, even a heroin pushing King of Hearts. I mean, it really has everything. It's only 11 minutes long, so it's well worth.
And they're really naming all the drugs in it.
Really. They name check everyone. Yeah. So shall we listen to a little clip from that?
Hi, you must be the March Hare.
Yeah. My friends, the Dormouse, he's sleeping, and the Hatter, he's traveling.
Can I just sit here a minute? I'm just a little tired.
You ought to have some pep pills, uppers, amphetamines, speed. Make you feel super good. super good.
Do you feel okay now?
Oh, well, nah. Sometimes you crash. You get kind of sick, and that's scary. You just kind of come all apart inside.
Well, it's very nice of you to offer them to me. But
offer them? Who offered them? These are mine.
Now, perhaps not surprisingly, when this film came out, not everybody was impressed with it in terms of it being anti-drugs propaganda. Some thought that it was just too much fun and too cool. And there were, you know, anti-drug authorities that said, this sends out a confusing message. It doesn't really explain in black and white terms that drugs are bad. Just stay off them. It just seems like more, you know, they create funkier Disney characters. So... undermines
yeah,
the
it,
message.
It's kind of, you know, advertising for drugs, basically.
Yeah, it is. So,
everyone wants to try them after watching this movie.
Yeah, but at least, you know, watch this film. So it'll definitely make you smile. And it kind of how I imagined, yeah, if Disney had hired not Tim Burton to do the Alice in Wonderland, but Terry Gilliam, then this is something close to what he would have probably come up with.
Now, we've talked about Alice in Acid Land. We can talk a little bit about more acid, I guess. The Acid Eaters.
Byron
and
May.
Also from a lovely year, 1968.
Yes. It was vintage year for drugs and drug films, I think.
Yeah, and also, I mean, most of these films are super low budget, and you can realize that there are... You know, the filmmakers were really looking for something, you know, a wet finger in the air. What would go down with the audience now and what's cheap to make, which is, you know, typical exploitation producer thinking. And I mean, this one we have, I'm just reading off our text about it. It's some 9-to-5 working stiffs who become drug-crazed bikers on the weekend.
Yes.
And they
another subgenre check, biker.
Yeah, and they enter a pyramid made of giant LSD cubes, which also happens to be the entrance to hell.
Of course it is, yes.
And but... it has, I'm sorry for spoilers here, but it has to end with a huge acid orgy.
It wouldn't be a 60s acid film if it didn't finish with an orgy. And I mean, that's pretty much a leitmotif, isn't it, in these other films we have from Something Weird, whether it's Psychedelic Sex Kicks or Wild Hippie Party.
Absolutely.
Which was a double bill, but, you know, free love, free drugs.
Yeah.
It goes together. And of course, the lovely, lovely posters, which do check them out on the Cult Fix website, because they are as psychedelic as anything in the film in terms of the fonts, the artwork, everything. So let's get a little bit more serious now, going back to the documentary vein with Weed, which is a documentary by Alex Dorenzi from 1972. And many people, or some people, people of a certain leaning and persuasion probably know Alex Dorenzi from his porn days of the 90s. I think he became the most high profile, kind of high concept and high budget porn director of the 90s with these very stylized films, of which I completely forget all of their names now. But he was a serious documentary filmmaker before that. And Weed is a really interesting documentary in terms of he's literally tried to cover the whole subject. I mean, all the way from the farm fields of it being grown in, and the drug dealers in Vietnam and Nepal and Cambodia, and, you know, the public inquiries and narcotics and the drug enforcement agencies guarding the borders. I mean, it really has everything. It's really insight into what the thinking was and what the culture around weed was back in those days in the early 70s.
Yeah, it really sticks out among our exploitation films, doesn't it? Because this has a mission.
Yeah, it does. And it's interesting the fact that it should be a director who became so notorious, really, for, you know, not even sexploitation, just pure sex porn films later on, for having made something as, you know, I don't know if you call it mainstream, but definitely straight face kind of documentary entry into the genre.
And also among these exploitative films, you also found an interesting film called A Day in the Death of Bobby G. And let's listen to a little bit of the music in the beginning of the film.
Well, again, well worth your time because it's only about 10 minutes long. It's probably, I would say, from what I've come across, the best anti-drug propaganda or documentary. And what's interesting about it is that unlike all of the Reefer Madness and other films that we've seen that were always about white middle-class kids being, you know, lured astray and going wrong with drugs, this is actually a showcase of the real damage that drugs do, which is mainly to ethnic minorities, black people, poor communities. So it was, again, produced by the U.S. Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration, the people who brought you Curious Alice. But it's really this black and white cinema verite that just seems to capture a day in the life of a small-time hustler trying to score heroin on the streets of Harlem. It's shot with long lenses, it's got a gritty naturalist feel to it, and it's got kind of pop vox interviews with people on the street, their attitudes about drugs and what they're doing, the damage they're doing to the people who take them, the community. I make it sound very boring and earnest, but it's done in really, you know, gripping style, and I would thoroughly recommend it just so people can see how, if you really want to make a film about drugs not being good for you, you know, the damage that drugs do, this is a really good film. It's actually the closest one that comes to being a piece of art.
Yeah, it's amazing the way you describe it, how they can cram all of this, both art and seriousness and you know, propaganda, all into this 10-minute film. That's amazing.
Yeah. It is. And I'd read online that apparently it won an award for short documentary or something at Cannes, but I haven't been able to confirm it. And the filmmakers didn't go on to much else. I think it went on to be a wedding photographer, but it's a really interesting film. And it's also an interesting counterpoint to the other, if we're going to do a double bill of kind of drug warning films, which is more typical of what I said, which is called Narcotics, Pit of Despair. And it's so not over the top, it's so obvious that the opening credits are over footage of a poisonous snake going.
What does that mean? I don't get it.
Oh, yes. No, drugs are deadly and bad for you.
Okay.
It's a poison, I tell
it's
you,
like
poison.
Poison. Oh.
Yes, it'll stick down your veins. It's all down for this sort of super white middle class high school sporty jock John, who, you know, needs a bit of pepping up for his exams. So he takes a couple of pills and then turns out this guy he knows is actually a drug dealer trying to get him hooked on heroin. And then eventually it all goes wrong. And it's actually interesting that there isn't a happy ending. That's the only good thing about this film. It actually says there is no end, you know, when you're a drug dealer until you die.
That's heavy.
Yeah. But what's interesting is the all these kind of people that you always see playing the leads in Reefer Madness, and you never see them again. Yeah.
True.
They have one moment in, you know, Future Cult Glory.
But that's what drugs do to you, isn't it?
They do. They kill you. They don't just kill, they kill your cinema career. But Kevin Teague, who is the lead in this one, he actually went on to, you know, having a fairly okay career in television, playing in Lost and Emergency, 48 Hours, K-9. Mm. So, you know, drugs, he didn't do too badly out of drugs or anti-drug films.
Yeah.
But we're not going to play a clip because it's not that good.
Yeah. But so should we go more mainstream now, maybe?
Yes.
Some pretty big actors coming up. And let's start with the clip and then we talk a bit about what it is.
You know, maybe I love this life. Love it. Because when we get up in the morning, we know exactly what we're going to do next. Puzzle for another bag.
Stop that man! Help! Police! Police!
You've been a bad boy, Jerome.
I'll bet this is your car.
Kiss him.
Kiss him.
I love to have my arms kissed.
Messing with some bad people, man.
All right, that free. Police.
We're gonna get the gig, Jay. And you're gonna get a force. Do you understand?
If I sell you a key of something and you happen to be the wrong guy, then I'd do some heavy time.
So that was a clip from Born to Win by Ivan Passer.
Yes, who's fairly famous mainstream Bollywood director. I'm trying to desperately remember what he did. But, that's how famous he was. Famous, quickly word. No, but it is chock full of great actors, not least George Segal, who... Segal?
Like a bird. No.
Segal. That was Chekhov. He was in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. He played the young couple to Burton and Taylor. And this is him on the streets of New York, you know, hustling around Times Square. And he hangs out with Karen Black.
One of my absolute favorites.
Yes. And she's delicious in this one. And very good as well. So they make a good pairing. But what's really funny is if you remember the haircut from No Country for Old Men, where is a Javier Bardem, you know, this was where he stole that haircut from. And it was by none other than a young actor called Bob De Niro, who I think went on to other. He doesn't play a psycho, doesn't play a drug dealer or anything. He just plays a good cop.
Straight cop.
Yeah.
Wow.
You heard him there. So, it's kind of a comedy. It's a bit of a drama, and it's just, again, lovely to see for the kind of street views of New York and Times Square back when it was, you know, considered seedy before Disney moved in on 42nd Street and Giuliani cleaned it all up. And if you like Karen Black, as you do, I would thoroughly recommend it.
Hope we can find more movies with her. She's wonderful. Actually, we released, Club Super 8 released the film version of The Grass is Singing some years ago.
With John Thor, wasn't it? Inspector Morse.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And a Nobel Prize winning novel. And that was pretty cool. We'll see if we can find that again.
Is that the only Nobel Prize winning book adaptation that Club Super 8 has released?
No, we do have some Selma Lagerlöf as well.
I was going to test you on that, but
well, you were testing me there.
I was testing you.
Yeah.
You do know your own films.
And I was sharp enough to know what. No, but if our listeners have been listening closely, you have also realized that all of the films so far have been from the United States of America.
Yes, true.
All of them, and there's a fair share of druggy movies from all around the world, and I mean we have our Arne Ragnarborn films from Sweden where there are various drugs and alcohol and stuff, but it's not the main topic of the films.
No.
But we do have one really cool film, and that is courtesy of 1, 2, 3 Ciao Simone.
Ciao Simone.
Yay! And it's called Don't Count on Us. And we'll listen to a little clip from that one.
E vado. E tu vieni con me.
No, io non vengo.
Tu vieni con me. Con me. Con me. Con me. Con me. Lo sai quello che ho fatto per arrivare fino a qui? Lo sai? Lo sai? Alzati, che cazzo stai a fare lì? Alzati.
Thank you.
Volevi venire con me, eh?
So this is a pretty serious film, but it also has some exploitative elements, as it should.
Yes.
And it's supposedly the first Italian film on drug addiction from the perspective of the addicts themselves.
Yeah.
And it's a very dark take on the side of Rome that we rarely see. We think of Rome as this romantic place, touristy. You know, and Fellini has
three coins in the fountain.
Cool sides, yeah. But here it's desperation, and I think it must have been pretty upsetting for the authorities in Italy to be, you know, show the country like this. And this is from 1978.
Yeah.
And apart from being a very serious film, it also contains, and I'm quoting ourselves, nudity, sex, coarse language, and, as they should have, a cool soundtrack.
A very cool soundtrack, definitely. So I think we should ask our beloved listeners to write in and make suggestions about what films, druggy films, they would like to see on in the future, or, you know, as opposed to...
Yes, I mean, we're open to suggestions all the time, and the biggest hurdle is really the rights, especially if it's big Hollywood studios. But you know, do come up with your suggestions, and we will start Googling like mad.
Yeah, and some of the best films that we've managed to get on recently, or we've put into contact with, have come from members who have written to us and say, hey, what about this film or that film? And then we start digging and we come and go, oh, it's this company, never heard of them, but they've issued it, so why don't we get talking to them? And then we discover they're sitting on a treasure trove. I mean, this might be a good opportunity to start talking about the new films on the site this week. Or
yeah, I think it's interesting. We don't make, you know, promises really about how many films we're adding every week, but we always add a new theme, that's for sure. Yeah. And then a couple of stray dogs as well. But this week it's been an outpour. I mean, we have so much new cool
overload.
Stuff. It's amazing. But I'm really, really proud of stating now that we now have all of the four films in the Language of Love quadrology. That is The Language of Love, More from the Language of Love, The XYZ of Love, and Love Play. And the one we missed out on before was The XYZ of Love. So that's now part of our content. And that is the one where it's talking about the problems with sex. And we're talking about abuse. We're talking about rape. We're talking about adultery. All of these things, but somehow ending up with a hippie orgy in a hippie commune anyway.
Mm.
Kind of weird. But what it does have from a Swedish point of view is that it has two remarkably famous people within this kind of, I would say, sleazy context. And one is Ola Ullsten, who was the leader of the Liberal Party in Sweden. And
yeah,
the other is...
One.
Leif Silbersky, who is the celebrity lawyer who was defending all the major cases back in the 70s in Sweden. And both of these guys are talking very seriously about sex and the law.
Mm.
I want to mention Linje 6 or Line 6, which was also called, hang on, it's so funny because this is a very, I would say, very innocent film from 1958. That really doesn't shock anyone. But when it was launched in the US, it was called Dangerous Sex, which is kind of silly. But it is about a woman who is she's witnessing this someone being really beaten up and realizes that it's a relative of hers who is doing the beating. So she has to flee the town. And then her background catches up on her because she used to be a prostitute.
Uh-huh.
What is most interesting with it from us, from our point of view, is that it's very, very much connected with the film Terror in the Midnight Sun, Rymdinvasion i Lappland, because it was produced by Mr. Bertil Jernberg, who produced Terror in the Midnight Sun, and it also stars both Åke Grönberg and Sten Gester. So it's really the Terror in the Midnight Sun connection there.
Hmm. a good double bill.
Pretty cool.
A quick name check also to some other ones, which I don't think we mentioned last week. I can remember. There is, of course, Piranha.
Oh, yeah. It's not the Piranha you're thinking, though.
No, not to be confused with Piranha 2, which was James Cameron's launch pad with Roger Corman.
Yeah.
So this is the film that enabled James Cameron to have a launch pad with Roger Corman.
Exactly.
And features Killer Fish. What more do you need?
And then, of course, we have Project Kill. And I've been watching a little bit of that, and it's so interesting to watch a film from 1976, which is a very serious film about a government project, drug project, actually, going wrong, but with Leslie Nielsen from The Naked Gun in the lead part.
Yeah.
And he's obviously a favorite of mine from the film Airplane, among others. And it's so hard to see him with a straight face in a straight movie. And it's like, I always think he's going to come up with like a punchline all the time. And he never does.
No, but you do know that he was also, was he the brother of Canada's deputy prime minister as well?
I did not know this.
Yeah. So there's another famous Nielsen, famous in Canada.
Wow.
I just imagine the two of them on stage together. People's expectations going the wrong way.
So it's there's lots of it's a big variety of films, and I don't even think we talked about Sound of Näverlur, which is also a nutty Swedish comedy. No English subtitles yet, but we hope to add them later on.
Yep, and indeed. More subtitles is definitely one of the things we will be using the money from the Swedish Film Institute for.
Yes, we want to add subtitles to a lot of films.
Now, we've already played the wonderful theme tune from Josefine Mutzenbacher, which is up in two versions, both films.
Yes, so we have them both in the original German language and in the English dub.
Yeah, and it's a very good English dub.
Yeah.
Even the song has been done, so they spared no expense.
Pretty cool, and great to add some German films with a contract with Ari and Lisa Film. So we're really, really happy about that.
Yes, hopefully some more from them.
Beautiful addition to our content.
And I love the fact that in English, Josefine Mutzenbacher, which clearly wasn't studied in literature class as much as maybe in German-speaking countries, is called Naughty Knickers and Deutsche Knickers in a Twist.
And is Knickers even a word when it was launched in America?
Gosh, no, that's a British thing. That's a good point.
It's a very British thing, isn't it?
Either they didn't launch it there or they had an American title for it as well.
Yeah, probably it had another title.
But it's more catchy than Mein 365 Liebhaber.
Yes, which means my 365 lovers, believe. Yeah. No, it's crazy. Yeah.
So
we added a film that is, it's funny in many ways. First of all, it's kind of a comedy, but it's also an explicit erotic movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from 1977. It's partly produced by the Swedish company Saga Film, who were also behind Joe Sarno's Fäbodjäntan. Or
but
Blow the Horn. Come Blow the Horn.
Who else is behind it? Name and shame them.
And who else is behind it? Name and shame them. It was directed by Charles Kaufman.
No.
And the cinematography was by Lloyd Kaufman.
His brother.
Have you heard of these brothers before?
I can't think of where, but you know, maybe it's because I only watch cult films. So,
So here is the team behind the legendary company Troma. So they did some Swedish-American porn in their early days.
My God.
And I haven't told you this, but I met with Lloyd Kaufman at a film festival, and I confronted him about this, and in his booth, because he was sitting in one of these, you know, sellers' booths at the festival.
Oh yeah,
was this old lady who he had been working with for you know decades, and I said, so you made this movie, and I actually had the VHS cover with me show it to him. Yeah,
yeah,
and he said, no, I never made that, and then he smiled broadly, and the lady said, no, he was never involved in anything like that. And she was laughing so hard. So I think we have it pretty much in evidence that he was behind the film.
See, this is almost as much of a shameful secret as the fact that wasn't he also the producer of My Dinner with Andre?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's been involved in some serious stuff as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He keeps quiet about that when he's trying to sell trauma films, but, you know, don't want to ruin his reputation.
Yeah, so there's so much good coming up, folks, and you know, we can only recommend a fraction of the films. We have all, I think we have, how many films now? 450
over,
or something?
Yeah, we're approaching, we've got 500, but obviously not all of them launched. Some were still waiting for subtitles, some were holding back for a special season.
Special
but,
themes, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So things keep evolving, and we are adding more and more films every week. So it's not ending here. It's, you know, it's going on and on and on.
But maybe we should flag that the podcast series, or the current season of the podcast series, is probably going to be taking a summer break. We're on our 10th episode, and I think we're going to be doing two more episodes, and then after that we'll give everybody a rest, let them catch up on the backlog of listening, or just go
and
do,
I mean,
other things.
A dozen podcasts, you know, right away. I think I'm impressed with ourselves.
Pats on the shoulder.
Yeah. No, it's good. And we're getting really, really nice feedback from people stating just that fact that, oh, I'm so happy that you are curating and recommending films. It's, you know, we're discovering so much stuff we never knew we needed before.
No, and I'll be honest, I discover stuff because it forces me to read up and discover new films and find more. And you know, hey, there are films on Cult Picks that I haven't seen.
Oh, yeah.
I'll admit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm so happy. This is the streaming service I always wanted myself.
Yeah, but I can always go to it and find something new and interesting. Yeah. So, and I'm not just saying that because I'm involved in it. So. But thank you to everybody who's always writing to us. And please do drop us suggestions, compliments, tell us what we're doing wrong, what we could be doing better, how we could improve the site. You know, this is your site, not just our site. Because
yeah, absolutely. And a little teaser for next week's episode, we are talking about Mac Ahlberg, the Swedish director who went to Hollywood because he had his... would have had his 90th birthday the other day. So we're going to go in more in-depth about him next week.
We're going to be talking about Big Mac a lot and showing his films.
Yeah.
And then we've got a very special guest for the 12th and final episode, but we're not going to reveal who are we.
Drum roll. No.
We'll keep you in suspense, but it's going to be a good one. We're going to go out on a high and, you know, drug theme high. How is that for wrapping up
Perfect.
This episode?
Perfect.
So, shall we play out with the clip then and say thank you from us for this week?
Let's do it.
All right, that's all from us this week with me, Django Nudo.
And the Smut Peddler.
This film was a Duty production in association with Saga Films of Sweden and Rheinstadt Productions of Germany. It starred Rene Verland in the role of the Lover's Lane car fantasy and Sonja Flicka as Maria and the part of the priest Tom Baker. Richard Rimmer as Mona's Wash Day Dream, and introducing Wanda as his wife. The starring role of Bob McKenzie was played by Wade Nichols, and introducing Monique Cardin in her first featured motion picture role as Mona McKenzie. Production manager and assistant editor credits in this motion picture are shared by Jörn Ashun and Chris Avildsen. Ingrid Kjellson was the costume designer and position consultant. Lars Swenson worked as the chief film editor, and director of photography was Lloyd Kaufman. I directed the film. My name is Charles Kaufman.